and welcome to another Comics Burst from the Full Force podcast, sponsored by Distant Panic Comics and Collectibles, where we take an in-depth look at the newest G.I. Joe comics and related titles of the week, with me as your host, Chris, as regular as IDW's release schedule, McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80. And joining me on this episode is Paddy Spanish Lennon and Brian, but only for the first part, Hickey. On this installment of your absolutely favourite kind of burst, we have an ending for G.I. Joe vs. the $6 Million Man and the Wreckers epic, thanks to Requiem, and we have a bunch of other related issues to look at too. So without further ado, let's get stuck into this comics burst. First up, G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, number 252, and I've got Brian Hickey with me to talk through this issue before we cut our ties, Brian, and you are replaced by Irish number one. I should have switched the numbers around, really. So, G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, issue 252, Special Missions, part 2 of 5. G.I. Joe, Cobra, two opposing forces, two powerful war machines, each made more lethal by the undeniable strength of their individual parts. But who and what are those parts? Stop saying parts. This issue, artist David Messina, Rom and Star Trek, joins forces with Larry Hammer to present Cobra's ruthless and deadly femme fatale, Baroness. So let's get stuck into this one, Brian, straight off. What did you think of the comic overall?
Like, you know, following in the footsteps of Special Issues number one, this really, you know, it took me by surprise. It's Baroness, one of these classic characters, and the story, it goes into somewhere I didn't think it was going to go. Well, there's a retrospective behind the character, but I wasn't expecting to have that kind of that love story, that romance in the background. So, you know, it was very interesting, that kind of insight into the Baroness's past. It makes her a much more kind of endearing character because, again, without kind of jumping too far ahead into the story just yet, we see there's kind of a good nature to the character as well. And seeing that softer, more humane side to her just makes her a much more interesting character, I suppose.
Yeah, a bit more rounded, right? So obviously the premise of the comic is that something that I kind of want to talk about first, the whole idea of the special missions. I've always loved the special missions format. This is slightly different in that it's really just a kind of it's a kind of like character specific one shot kind of deal. So instead of it being about like a team of, you know, doing a special mission, it's kind of they've just used the name really in, or Larry's just used the name for this particular run of comics in the middle of the A Real American Hero series. And like you said, the first part that we saw with, I've completely forgotten who the first part was now.
Oh, Stalker.
So the first part that we saw with Stalker, again, that was one that we both enjoyed and something that took us by surprise in how, I suppose in how they structured the story. They managed to get a lot into a very small comic. They've done the same here with the Baroness. And I was always kind of, I was a little bit skeptical about the kind of character focus and the fact they went with the same kind of crew that they always really do. I mean, I know Stalker isn't like the first name on the team sheet, but he's certainly someone that's had a lot of, you know, a lot of shine over the years in the comics. The Baroness, when I heard the Baroness had been done, and Duke and so on and so forth, and Destro, I was kind of thinking, oh, you know, have we exhausted these stories already? But what I really love about this particular comic, it's kind of taken me away from that, and it's gone, here's a cool story of something that's happening in the current, you know, universe. They're in Darklonia. The Darklonians are looking at the Baroness and Cobra as helping them, you know, that they're basically like consultants. They're almost like kind of war consultants for the Darklonians. And the Baroness is there with a Saw Viper and a Range Viper, which is really nice that they've kind of thrown some troopers in there. The Range Viper, you know, we've seen in previous comics, but again, doesn't get much shine that often. The Saw Viper we see quite, you know, every now and again, but it's nice again to see some new troopers in there. And it's not just like a Cobra trooper and a Viper. You know, we're getting some
of the more specialist forces.
Exactly. So obviously the story goes through of her helping the Darklonians. They come across a young girl who is obviously part of the rebel forces, or an innocent bystander, really. And, you know, she shows compassion towards the girl because obviously she sees, you know, she goes back to her childhood in the flashback. And that's where we start seeing, you know, basically how the Baroness was created in a way, like how that personality was built. We see like her relationship with the father, which, you know, very kind of aggressive, nasty piece of work of a dad. But she, you know, obviously gets quite strong because of that, and she has to grow up quite quickly.
The dad actually is actually really good, really important character here. He doesn't value her at all. He sees her as a total failure.
Yeah.
And obviously he's very proud over the DeCobre name, so he talks about, you know, DeCobres don't cry over little silly toys.
Yeah, and rips its head off and everything. It's so harsh.
So even when she's only a child, she's, I suppose, that kind of fierceness of character is being built up from this, you know, this father who doesn't really value his daughter. Mm. And of course, yeah, Baroness, she sees herself in that little girl, that vulnerable little girl. She sees herself in that. And in fact, this is a recurring theme throughout this story. So on this particular mission in Darklonia, there's little things that happen throughout the story that drive her memory back to her kind of former days.
And one of those kind of memories is the kind of relationship she builds with James McCullen, aka Destro, and how they were in college together and they fenced together and all this kind of stuff. There was a competitive edge and drive between them because there was this passion between them as well. On one side, you've got the Baroness, who's this activist fighting against the government, fighting against the establishment, and that goes towards why she joins Cobra as well, like that added element as to why she wants to do that. But obviously James McCullen at that time is of this rich family and it's all about the business, and so they've got these kind of opposing views on things, but they love each other. So there's this kind of like real conflict between them, and then they have this little fencing match where she goes overboard and cuts his face. And then immediately, like, you can see that the anger took over, but, you know, she that's where the evil was inside her. And she's kind of, you know, all, yes, you know, bloodlust and bloodthirsty. But then as she's done it, she realizes, oh, my God, I've just cut the face of, you know, I've just basically pushed the man away that I love. And then obviously the two go kind of go their separate ways to be reunited later on, I suppose. But I love the way they built that relationship up over again, like it's a very short period of time in this comic. And then in and around that happening, we also have a sniper issue in Darklonia, and the Baroness is then trying to outdo the sniper.
I really like this particular part of the story. You know, clearly the Darklonians, they're the bad guys. You know, they're in cahoots with these Cobra advisors, but they really look like scum, these Darklonian soldiers.
Yeah.
And we're told up early on that they shelled a village and that they massacred civilians in the attempt to kind of, you know, bomb out some of the rebels. Obviously they failed, and the rebel leader is still holed up in this ruined village in a bell tower. And the fact that the rebel leader is this really strong female character to kind of go up against the Baroness, I love that kind of those sort of dynamics.
Yeah, it's and yeah, how the story like mirror evolves. Images. Yeah, absolutely. And the Darklonians obviously get wiped out, don't they, in that by the sniper. And the Baroness fires back to, you know, trying to protect the child actually as well.
So actually that's a pivotal moment there, because the child that we, you know, mentioned earlier in the story, you think they've moved on, they've kind of left her behind, and they've carried on their kind of their recon around this ruined village. But the child has clearly followed the Baroness. And as the Baroness is getting in position to get that killing shot on the sniper, the child completely gives away her cover. And one of the remaining Darklonian soldiers, his instant reaction is to shoot the girl. But at the bottom of that panel, at the bottom of that page, we just see the blam, and you know, he's been struck in the head with a bullet. And of course, when you turn the next page, the reveal is that the person holding the smoking gun is the Baroness.
Yeah, like initially you think the sniper's got him, don't you? Because he's kind of like maybe stood up and, you know, kind of made himself aware. But you're right, that kind of nice little reveal around the corner, that was a nice touch, definitely.
So, and then, of course, without even blinking, Baroness immediately swings back around to her original position and fires, again, showing that incredible skill that she possesses as kind of a military person, and fires. And we have our, is it the Saw Viper,
yeah,
then
the
comes
Saw
along
Vipers,
and
yeah,
confirms that was a direct hit. So we think that's it. Our kind of rebel hero is has met her match and has been defeated.
And she's not, because when they go up the bell tower, she isn't there anymore. She's put her hat on. She's put her hat on the rifle, and obviously the bullet has gone straight through the sight. which is pretty impressive. Yeah, she obviously gets away to fight another day. So it probably will, it won't be the last time we see maybe Darklonia come up in this as well. So that I'm interested in seeing that rebel and the Baroness maybe, you know, tussling over something else later on in the series as well. But yeah, really, really cool. And then obviously it finishes with Destro and the Baroness meeting up as the helicopter lands, and she calls him the nickname that she called him back in college, and he even says, and he even says, "You haven't called me that," or "Cully, you haven't called me that since." And she's like, "Shut the fuck up."
That actually, I love that little twist there, because earlier in the story, when she first meets James McCallum, she's talking to him and he goes shh, and he puts his finger on her lips.
Yeah.
And of course she gets to turn those tables on him.
Yeah.
Right at the very end of this, which is great.
What I was actually really impressed with, the story's, it's a nice combined story. It's a good solid one shot, I think, personally. A lot happens in it, and they've managed to do it without it feeling clunky or rushed in certain places. It's like a nice pace to it. I really enjoyed it. But on top of that, the artwork, I just find gorgeous. I think it's absolutely beautiful. From David Messina, really, really good work on the actual art. Some really big panels as well, like some really nice, like you get to see the Saw Viper, the Range Viper. You see them real close up. You see the helmets and all the detail on them. There's some really nice panels where you've got the Baroness standing above, you know, where they're all surrounded her, all the Darklonian forces are surrounded her because she's just cracked one of them in the back of the head, who was about to take the child's toy away, and she just like cracks him in the back of the head, like, you know, get, you know, leave that alone kind of thing. And the rest of them have got their guns on her, and she's just standing over him, not caring about the other guys that have got the guns on her, and all you can see is like, it's like the silhouette of her head with the glasses showing but nothing else. And then the rest of her is like in detail. I love that panel. I think that's really cool.
We actually see the Baroness a few times in silhouette with just the glasses kind of highlighted. And they're usually in moments of where that anger, that pure anger, is coming out.
Absolutely.
And
yeah,
it's almost like I think the artist is using that deliberately as a tool to show that she has these flashes where she gets, you know, she goes into a very dark place inside.
Yeah, that, it's a very good point, actually, that, Brian, because as much as I'm aware of those two points, one where she cuts Destro in the face, I hadn't put those together. Like, I hadn't put those two scenes together, but you're right. Like, it's the artist is saying, like, this is the moment where she loses her cool. Like, most of the time, she is, like, just deadpan. She's cool. Even under fire, she's calm, collected, and that makes her very, very dangerous. And then there are these moments when she just doesn't give a shit. Like, you know, it's like all of a sudden it's like, I don't care that you're going, you know, that you're a Darklonian soldier who is paying effectively for our services. You know, I don't care about all of the guys around me with guns. I'm going to crack you in the back of the head, and I'm about to kill you if you do not comply with that wish. And then the time when she cuts Destro, you just see her lose it. You know, she just goes completely, yes, you know, just that's it. And I love that. That is a really good technique, actually, and something that I hadn't noticed until it was pointed out just then. But really cool.
Messina's work, you know, throughout this it's beautiful. It's stunning work. And what he does very effectively, he uses, you know, small individual parts to break out of the panels here and there. And it just breaks up the visual flow, makes it very dynamic looking.
Yeah.
So absolutely. We have there's a scene there where the frag viper gets hit by the sniper, and we just have blam, and just the words blam are breaking out of the panel, spilling into the panels above and below that. And it's just a really dynamic shot. And I've got to say, those sideburns on James McCallum are just fantastic.
I like that we get to see him like younger as well, and kind of without the mask, and I'm interested to hear what his voice sounds like as well, even though you can't hear that obviously. There's a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of artistic license has gone into that particular design, but I really do like the way he was done, and yeah, it's really cool. I really like this issue.
One final thing just to throw in there, obviously on the inside front cover, you know, anyone who buys the IDW comics, you'll be familiar with the cover variants that they show on the inside front cover, and we have a lot of cover variants for this particular issue. The one I got is the cover by John Royle, which is a beautiful, beautiful cover. That's variant cover B. But we've got to give a shout out to fellow co-host Adam Richies.
Absolutely.
Who's got the cover RE for Wonder World comics in there too, which is great.
It's really nice cover, that one. And that's going to be available at JoeCon next week as well. So
I would
suggest, if people are, you know, want any version of this comic, the Adam Rich's cover is gorgeous. And on the back, you've got like the Cobra logo with a blank page, so you can actually get, you know, one of the sketch artists to maybe do something really cool with it. But it's really, really cool. I love the 80s effect he's gone with on that as well. Really, really nice.
Yeah,
lovely stuff. Anywho, there is one more thing I wanted to mention. We do see the Cobra transport copter again, the one that we see in loads of comics, loads of other media, and have never seen it in toy form. So I'm glad that we keep seeing this, because eventually, at some point, you get to wonder that we might actually get this in vehicle form at some point, because it's a gorgeous, gorgeous vehicle.
That would be fantastic to get that. I love that it has that sort of shark tooth mouth piece over there, you know, underneath the cockpit.
Absolutely.
What a troop carrier. I mean, look, guys, somebody out there, let's make it happen.
I think I've seen a couple of customs, and obviously there's the True Heroes line, and a lot of the kind of, you know, those and like the core and stuff. I'm sure there have been a few vehicles in there that you could, you know, jury rig the kind of that Cobra transport copter. But anyway, what about potatings for this one, Brian? What are you going to give it?
I mean, I loved it. I'm going with the 5 on this here. I thought this was fantastic. Artwork, amazing. Hammer is on fire these days. I love him, absolutely love him, what he's coming up with, and as a story, just really, really came together for me very well.
I honestly have to agree. I think there's nothing in the book, as I read it, I don't find anything. I mean, there are elements that are, I suppose, I wouldn't say stereotypical, but like, I like the fact they added the fencing thing in there. I thought that was quite a cute way of getting the two, you know, and obviously that is the kind of sport of the Rich as well, in the people that, you know, in that kind of arena as well, so and in Europe too. So I do like that they went with those kind of, or that Larry went with those kind of aspects of the story. But I don't really, there's nothing really about the book that I can really criticize. Like, I don't feel like I can criticize anything. The art's gorgeous. The color from Alessandra Alexakis. Wow. So the colors from Alessandra Alexakis, I hope I got that name right. Again, beautiful, really pop, really nice, and it kind of, like, I don't know, takes me back a little bit to some of the earlier kind of comics and like the Image and Devil's Due Productions run, like the kind of real vibrant kind of colorings. You know, everything about it is really, really good. So you're right, I can't really say other than it's got to be 5 potatings as well. So
could I just weigh in on the coloring there, because you made a really good point there about that. And of course, you know, we're always very quick to give the artist, you know, full credit. But the colours on this are beautiful. And what you see as a recurring theme throughout some of these panels, you see this, that the colourist has these red and black backgrounds. They have no connection to the actual environment that the characters are situated in. It's usually when you have a close-up on a character. And that really high contrast colouring, it's very aggressive. It's also very dynamic.
Yeah.
And the colourist has really helped bring things to a new level, for sure, in terms of the action and how the action plays out, particularly when characters are angry or aggressive. She just gets those color punches, you know, perfectly placed.
Absolutely. And also, I suppose we should also really give props to Inca Elisabetta D'Amico. Again, I'm probably murdering these names, but again, and letters, Neil Uyatake. So I mean, amazing work on this one. Really, really loved it. Also, kind of to kind of back up what you're saying about the colours there, I love the fact they went with the Saw Viper and the Frag Viper even more, because you've got a real contrast in and difference in their two costumes.
Yes.
And I love the fact that the Saw Viper is the one trooper that doesn't die in this, and he's the one that is bright purple with, like, you know, neon green visor, and the sniper couldn't get him. So well done. But anyway, awesome. Right, that's G.I. Joe Real American Hero 252, Special Missions Part 2 Baroness. We're going to leave you now, Brian, I'm afraid, and we're going to pick up another Irish presenter in Paddy, and we'll move on to the $6 Million Man crossover. Thanks for jumping on, mate. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Enjoy, guys. Take care.
As Cobra's plan for global terror begins to crumble under the foot of G.I. Joe's powerful new teammate, the $6 million man becomes the world's deadliest ticking time bomb. With Cobra Commander's hand over the detonator, Scarlet and her team must make a final violent race to his throne room, not his toilet. Paddy, what did you think of this as a final issue for the for this particular little series?
I think it is probably it's another one of those series that they've done that could have benefited from probably another issue, I think.
Yeah.
Again, it seems a little bit rushed towards the end. They don't. They're trying to wrap up three separate storylines. You know, $6 Million Man versus Joe's Outside, Snake Eyes versus Storm Shadow, and Scarlet and her guys reenacting the raid. To try and get away from the building.
Oh, and Lady J and Roadblock in a bank as well, which kind of is a bit random. Yeah.
So there's probably. They probably had a couple of too many subplots going on in this to really do them all justice.
Here's a question for you. Do you think the Snake Eyes Storm Shadow thing was necessary, considering we've had that in, I don't know, so many different comics over the years? Do you think it was necessary in this? Were they just kind of, like, you know, doing a little bit of foreshadowing or something? I mean, what do you think about that?
I actually think it was completely unnecessary, to be honest, because it only goes through two pages. Essentially, it's a two-page long sequence, and then Snake Eyes wins and then walks off. literally, it accomplishes nothing, only to delay Snake Eyes by 30 seconds as he tries to get to the other guys.
Yeah.
I can understand why the writer wanted to write it. I mean, if I was given a chance to write G.I. Joe, I would have a Snake Eyes Storm Shadow fight in there too.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was necessary and it could have been cut out.
Yeah. I kind of feel like what you want, that's where you want a bit more, you want a bit more kind of background on the $6 million man or some of these other characters that have been brought into it that you kind of think that's where you want to be putting the focus in right now. But yeah, I agree with that. Kind of a bit unnecessary.
I would prefer to see a bit more of Scarlet Recondo Stalker. See me a bit more of that. And actually, I don't think I'm probably gonna get, you know, slammed by the G.I. Joe fandom at large for this, but I just think Tom Max and Zaymot are the two stupidest characters in G.I. Joe.
They're the Mapes singularity, aren't they?
The Mapes, the Zaymot singularity, as we're calling them. They're like a bunch of circus acrobats. Like, how the f*** are they stopping four special forces trained combatants, one of whom, Scarlet, is not far off equal to Snake Eyes in terms of fighting people one-on-one.
She's basically a ninja. So, yeah, I know what you mean.
She's basically a ninja, yeah. So, I just always thought they were a bit dumb. I would have preferred, actually, if that had been a Storm Shadow versus them fight.
Yeah, because you could have imagined him holding them off for a long time. And
whereas, you know, these f***ing carnival tricksters, Tom X and Zaymot. They're just not a physical threat.
Yeah. What about, obviously, because obviously they're doing, you know, all of these little threads are kind of coming to a fault, and then it turns into a basically, okay, well, you know, Steve Austin is about to blow up. He's going to become nuclear. So then he decides to sacrifice himself and fly off on a claw. But he doesn't sacrifice himself effectively. I mean, he just gets to distance and then somehow removes
his own arms and legs,
and then falls into the water, in which they find him later, which is great because it's like, oh, brilliant, he didn't die. I was actually quite happy, but at the same time it was so like, oh, okay, that
it's
was
a bit
cop-ish. Yeah, I mean, I'd have preferred, you know, it's very much Batman in the Dark Knight Rises.
Why didn't he just take off his arms and legs and put the claw on autopilot and then sit around in the ground and watch it explode from the ground?
Exactly. So maybe those claws are just manual operation only. So,
maybe, but I'm sure he could do something with an iPad and a bit of duct tape, you know?
Anyway, what would you give this particular issue in the potatings department?
Overall, like I said, I think there's some fairly serious flaws with it. I think overall, I'd probably give this a 2.5. As a series, it's probably kind of fairly solid 3.5.
Yeah, I would say as a little kind of series, I think when people first saw this come up, I was excited when I first saw the news of them doing this crossover with Dynamite. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, that's going to be fun. And I wasn't disappointed. I really wasn't. I think the last issue, I think after a while, once you get over that kind of initial hype and it's just coming through on your pull list each kind of, you know, couple of weeks or however, probably longer than that, is, you know, you kind of get over that initial hype kind of element. And that's, I think, where you start, you delving into some of the kind of flaws in it. But I didn't have any issues with it until this last issue because of that speed and the pace and everything. So I think I agree with you. I think I'm going to have to go 2.5 on the final issue. But overall, I would say a 4 because I think I just enjoyed it very much as a spin-off. And I kind of like, you know, if they could do more of these, I'd be happy to have every now and again just a little crossover, just a 4-parter here and there. I think that's a really nice idea with G.I. Joe. And it gives, I suppose it gives them some spikes with some of these, you know, and also crossover audience kind of deals as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. It gives, you know, they've probably got a similar, it's a good property to cross over with G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
It's a similar age, you know, similar vintage, and probably a very similar fan base. I know I'm not really familiar with $6 Million Man, but I know a couple of older G.I. Joe fans would be.
Yeah.
And would be big fans. And of course, he has a tie-in there to the G.I. Joe brand.
Yeah.
By having, you know, the figures,
yeah,
similar to the 12-inch Joe.
Yeah, the 12-inch kind of guys are going to be into this stuff, definitely. I mean, again, I really enjoyed it. Well, that's the end, then, of G.I. Joe Real American Hero versus the $6 Million Man as a series.
Longest title ever.
Oh, God, isn't it? Let's move into the Transformers area now that we've done all the G.I. Joe stuff. Starting with Optimus Prime, issue 19, The Falling Part 4. Onyx Prime's motivations are clear and his scheme seems unstoppable. Heroes have fallen and hope dwindles for the survivors. Cybertron's last chance of salvation is in the hands of, well, that would be telling, wouldn't it? But I kind of think we know now, don't we? But anyway, this, funnily enough, like, the last Optimus Prime issue where we got that shockwave reveal was... I was like, what? I think I'm still getting over that kind of feeling about the whole thing. I didn't feel like I suppose obviously it was because of the reveal, because the actual comic itself, I've kind of struggled with a little bit, you know, not to understand it, but struggled with it to enjoy it. You know, it's a shame really, because I kind of, you know, I want to really enjoy it, but at the same, and like I said, we talked about Kay Zama's, and everything like that, haven't we? Is she in this one?
She's not. Sarah Pichardrosha
this one, isn't it? Yeah, so
yeah.
Again, like, but in the past, in the other issues, we've really enjoyed her art. And again, it carries on through this one. This is beautiful artwork, like really gorgeous colouring, and I'm really into it. But the story, I keep getting like, I don't know, I zone out. And I couldn't even tell you what really goes on in this issue, other than Devastator turns up.
Well, it's a Starscream-centric issue. Him wondering, you know, how he's failed so badly.
How many of those have we had?
Well, we've had a few. I do think this is better than most of them, because the reason Starscream figures out why he failed so badly is because Onyx Prime, or Shockwave, turns up and says, well, you know, I forced you to fail so badly.
Yeah,
it's all been my plan that you would be a complete loser.
Yeah.
Because I needed a complete loser to be in charge of Cybertron in the run-up to my glorious return.
Yeah, he invented the Dark Cybertron prophecy. Well, then again, he's invented everything because he got sent back into
the
past.
He invented all the prophecies. He sent the Metro Titan to Cybertron millions and millions of years ago so that it would wait and programmed it to wake up and announce Starscream as the chosen one. So Starscream would become the head of government.
Yeah.
And therefore the government would be ineffectual and useless when he turned up to take control. And there's a great line where Starscream says, that's impossible. It would have taken millions of years for you to have planned all this. And Shockwave is like,
yep.
Well, yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Like, you think of 4 million years and you think, actually, that is a huge amount of time. You probably could have got a lot of this done in a shorter period of time. But I suppose when you're dealing with these creatures that live for millions of years, these things have to be on the longer con. We also see Optimus Prime return, don't we? And like, he's not dead, or is he? He thinks he's in the Afterspark. And we get another reveal at the end of this issue where Bumblebee appears at the end, and they're just looking. So I was wondering where I was.
Bumblebee, that character who turned up in Unicron Zero, Free Comic Book Day comic there a few weeks
ruined.
Ago. So ruined.
So I mean, how are you thinking? How are you thinking this relates to his return? What are your thoughts? What are your theories behind what we're looking at the end of this comic?
Who knows? Is it even Bumblebee from this universe? No idea. So, look, we know he's back. We know it does appear to be Deb Bumblebee because he's in the proper mode, proper Transformers Generation body type that he had before he died. Don't know. It's John Barber, so I'm sure there is some really weird little note of information we'll find out. Well, you know, 3 years ago in issue blah, I mentioned this. And that's how this happened. Because, like I said, John Barber is the master of using IDW continuity to his credit. And to be fair, he is managing to slot a lot of things into place in these last couple of issues. There's one last issue left of this story arc. So I imagine the next issue is Bumblebee and Optimus teaming up to take Shockwave down, and then we're into the final story arc before this ends.
The whole Unicron saga,
So I think it's a solid enough issue. It's nowhere near as good as the Shockwave reveal and the Shockwave explaining his plans issues, because they were just like masterclasses in, well, here's what I've been planning for the last 5 years.
Yeah, I think that ruined me for this issue, in all honesty, and I don't think that...
Yeah, I think it is a massive... It was going to be hard to top that.
You're right, though. I mean, going through the comic again, it's got some lovely bits in it. Look, some lovely, you know, little back and forths, and like Starscream realizing he's actually just he's been put here and basically been, you know, puppeteered throughout the entire life,
through his entire existence.
Yeah, which is mind blowing, and that's really that. You know, but again, like I suppose we're already aware of this. I mean, obviously the details come out that he did it specifically to make, you know, forced him to fail, which is like a really, again, it's a nice touch on top of what we already knew. For me, it's the, I suppose, not also like going, okay, so now Bumblebee's here, and we've already, like you said, we already saw him in the Free Comic Book Day Unicron issue. So what does it actually mean? I suppose we'll find out. I think if everything had been released in the right way, I might just be more level-headed about it. But because of these things all coming at you at different times, sometimes, I mean, okay, for example, the next issue we're going to look at, but before we do that, we'll get some potatoes, and I'll talk about the next issue separately. So what would you give this Optimus Prime issue overall?
It's probably a solid 3.
Okay, cool. I'm going to go 2.5 because I was that badly ruined. By Shockwave ruined me so hard in the last issue. So moving on then. Transformers Lost Light 18. Lights out. The Everlasting Voices trilogy concludes with an explosion of hope, a grave betrayal, and more answers than you can handle. Events of the last 6 years build to a frenzy of revelations, casting everything that's gone before in a new and deadly light. No exaggeration, no hyperbole, lies. There has never been a more important issue of Lost Light. Now, this is what I'm... This annoyed me again, but last week this was supposed to have been delivered to the comic book store, the local comic book shop. The week before, I think, and it wasn't. And I was kind of like, okay, well, you know, fair enough. We looked on digital, and it was there to purchase. So there wasn't an error. It was, you could actually purchase it. So I was kind of like, oh, for goodness sake. And then the following week, we get it. I know you're going to go wait a week, or you could just get it on the digital download. But when you've got like a pull list coming through, and you know that it's out there to be read, and you can't read, it's really annoying. It's like, I've got to kind of avoid spoilers. And my goodness.
Spoilers, yeah, avoid Twitter for
my goodness, this was chock full of spoilers. And some really interesting, actually, I'm going to give it its credit here, because I've often like had a dig at Lost Light, where everyone's really funny, everyone's got that kind of thing going on when they're all humorous and everything. But I have really been intrigued by the last few issues of this. And this one, a lot of people were a bit, you know, I suppose like not annoyed, but like a little bit meh with the whole reveal of stuff.
Reveal, yeah.
But I'll leave you to talk about that, Paddy, and what you felt about it. But I thought it was quite interesting personally.
Yeah, it's, I think I said this to you on Twitter or on Facebook the other day. I can see why people would be upset with it, because it kind of screams of the reveal of what happened to Earth in Battlestar Galactica in the reboot series a few years back, where, oh, this is it?
Yeah.
All these things you've been building to, and this is it?
It's the it was all a dream reveal, isn't it? It was all a dream reveal.
Well, essentially, that's essentially what happens. You know, spoiler alert, they find that the Knights of Cybertron had discovered a space station that was a medical complex that made you... It was one medical complex. It's like the Dignitas Clinic in Switzerland.
Euthanasia.
People went there to die.
Euthanasia clinic.
Be euthanized, and the space station made you have a really nice last day before you died, essentially. Yeah. You know, it hit, you know, through a variation of hypnosis and holograms, made you see what you wanted to see that would make you happiest before you died. And so the Knights of Cybertron had arrived 10 million years before, had seen the perfect Cybertron. And that's what they sent back as a message via the Matrix, to say that, look, we found a perfect place where everybody can live forever and be happy. In fact, it was all a dream created by this space station as it yeah. killed them.
Which I think is actually, when you kind of break that down, I was kind of like, that's quite an interesting way of going about it. I don't come at it like I was, you know, everyone's expecting that they either find or don't find Cyber Utopia. And I kind of think like, this is a cool way of going, holy shit, this whole quest, you know, I kind of see it as almost like a metaphor for faith and what we believe in as individuals and all this kind of stuff. Not necessarily, you know, religion, but I mean, as in the things that we put stock into, the things that we, you know, that we all are all searching for. And it just happens to be that, you know, they're all going on this quest to try and find something, and they find something that individually matches their needs. But it turns out to be a euthanasia clinic that gives them a nice kind of, you know, memory. And I just thought, holy crap, that's like really deep and quite, you know, quite interesting to go with it. And I expected that, obviously, in the previous issue. So the reveals in this issue, but we could almost see what was coming.
Yeah, I mean, we were expecting this to be a fake out.
Big time,
As we discussed last time, we discussed the last issue of Lost Light. It's the main issue. I don't think it's a terrible idea. It is a bit of a letdown, I think, maybe.
Do you think it's a cop out?
I don't know if it's hardly a cop out. I can understand where people who think it's a cop out are coming from.
I think it's a good attempt, personally.
It is a bit of a, oh really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they could have found a Knights of Cybertron. But I have a feeling that this is going to wrap up with it being, well, you know, the real quest was the friends we made along the way, you know, and what we discovered about ourselves as we travelled. And you're like,
well, something else I'll put to you, Paddy. A few people have mentioned that maybe this is just a fake out of a fake out, and that there is something else still to be quest for. If you know what I mean, obviously it's a bit late now because the whole universe is coming to an end.
Yeah, I mean, what they have to wrap up is Getaway still having the Lost Light.
Yeah.
So. And that was pretty heavy on the last page of this issue. And that'll have to be wrapped up over the next 5 issues. Other than that, there's probably a few more things that they need to answer. You know, a couple of more references they've made to things and so on that need to be wrapped up. The other thing I didn't like about this is there's very little context provided for this clinic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not really been mentioned before. And you would think that something that they all suddenly know what it is when they arrive there.
Like the old logo.
You'd think it would have been mentioned at least.
Is it Ratchet that sees like the old logo or something? Yeah.
Yeah, you'd think Ratchet sees the logo and is like, oh yeah, I recognize that logo. And then Drift is able to read the data tracks and give them a summary of exactly what it is in 10 seconds. Yeah. They were expecting to find it on their way.
I thought it was very easy for them to work out that it was something wrong. You know, it was almost like a couple of them were so against the thought of finding this place. Like they were along with the quest, not for different reasons.
Why are they the only people to never have been taken in by this?
Yeah, totally.
You know, and even then only a handful of them. But I mean most of the crew figure out that there's something weirder going on. Like Nautica knows it, Hot Rod, Ultramagnus, Drift, Ratchet. They all know. They all figure out there's something weird going on.
Skeptics, I'll call.
Yeah, I guess. But there's also the fact that Nightbeat apparently doesn't figure it out, him being a detective. You know, you taught someone who would have been... So, you know, he dies, you know, having been taken in by it. You know, like... That's not what that character is at all. That character's come back from the dead already in the universe because he knew there was something wrong with what had happened to him. He had his own spotlight that was a detective story back in the day that set up a lot of the universe stuff. So it's weird that, put it this way, how did the detective not figure it out?
And also in the last panel, we see these kind of zombie transformers turn up. I think it's Perceptor, Hound, a couple of other guys in there too. I remember
Mainframe. Basically, the guys on the Lost Light who would be less likely to get along with Getaway. Yeah. It's mentioned in a prior issue that he has a Spark Eater cannon that he can use to turn people into Spark Eaters, and that's what they are.
Cool. And so again, that's gonna bring us into Getaway in the next kind of couple of issues, which is kind of something it's been a hanging thread that needs to be pulled, I think, and get that sorted out. There was a couple of issues where they were talking about that. What was it? It was almost like a time loop that was going on and on, keeping them like in that kind of constant time loop thing. That was a really cool, interesting couple of issues. I was like thinking, how the hell are they going to get out of this one? But you know, it's going to be an interesting finish, I think, for this series. Mm-hmm. What would you give this issue then as a potating?
As a rating, I think it is a 3.5.
Awesome. I'm going to go, because I actually really like this one. This got me kind of quite excited, and as I was reading, I was like, oh, nice. I'm going to give it a 4, but I really enjoyed it. And next up, let's move into an issue that we wanted to do during the interview with Nick Roach, because obviously he's, you know, the main person behind this creation of this issue. But that Roach interview just got out of hand. It was about 7 hours long. And so we thought, well, you know, we'll save it for the Comics Burst. And that is Transformers Requiem of the Wreckers, Annual 2018. Wreck and Rule. They've been beaten up, torn apart, betrayed, and had their sins revealed. The few remaining Wreckers are more lost and lonely than they've ever been, which makes it the perfect time for them to come under fire from an anti-Cybertronian campaigner and an old foe. Remember them fondly, because this is the Requiem of the Wreckers. Paddy, take us through it. What were your thoughts on this as a little kind of an ending to the Wreckers saga, shall we say?
I think it is a really excellent ending to this series that has gone on. Again, I think it is something that probably, and we forgot to ask Nick this, but I have a feeling this was supposed to be something longer, as in a few issues that he had to cut down to get into a double-sized issue, essentially, because there's certain plot points that I think kind of get brushed over. Overlord passing himself off as a pretender.
Yeah, that was quick. That was really quick.
Is literally like that character was introduced and killed off in 3 pages.
Two pages.
So I think if he'd had a bit more space, I think he should have gone into that a little bit more. I have a feeling that, like I said, this was edited down from something that was supposed to be maybe an issue or two longer than it is. But again, I really liked the idea. I copped it was Overlord immediately, given that the name of the character was Megan Giglione. And of course, Megan Giga being his power godmaster drivers in Masterforce. Nerd, I know.
That's a good spot. That's nothing. That's great.
I think it's a fabulous issue. I do. I think if the other two ongoing series end as solidly as this, I would be very, very, very happy. Some great moments in here. I really liked them giving Impactor his new Earth mode.
Yeah.
I really liked. There's a couple of really good jokes in it. Particularly, there's a bit where Springer is saying to Verity that he's not transforming to helicopter mode because it's too noticeable. As he, an armored tank, drives down the highway and stops off for petrol in a petrol station.
And then gets shunted as well, doesn't he?
And then gets shunted. Also, very, very, very nice Mass Effect reference in the name of the petrol station as well, which Nick confirmed is a Mass Effect reference, thanks to Brendan Cahill, confirmed it to me on Twitter.
Yeah, Nick's done a really good job here, hasn't he? And I think I really loved the fact that you've got everywhere that's separated with like a flashback or a different element of the storyline, you've got different artists behind it, and obviously having Jeff Senior, and Brendan as well, they did a bang up job. Nick as well, I mean, the art is on point. The other thing is, like, other than the Jeff Senior parts, the art ties together comfortably. Like, I don't see a massive difference between Nick and Brendan's.
He's mimicking his style.
That's a skill.
He works.
That's a skill and a half.
It is. It really is.
But the Jeff Senior parts. As we mentioned with Nick in the interview, if you haven't listened to it, go on YouTube and check it out, or on our Facebook page. But we did an interview with Nick Roach, and we talked in depth about this actual issue. And yeah, the chance to kind of work, he's worked with Simon Furman and Jeff Senior. I mean, that would be it. I'd put the boots up and just walk out into the, I'll walk to the Medibay euthanasia clinic in wherever, the head for Cyber Utopia. That's what I would do, because you're not getting any better than that, are you? Seriously? I mean, that's Transformers A-list,
no,
isn't it?
No, I don't think so.
But again, beautiful. Mm-hmm.
I think, like I said, I don't want to go too much into it because I think everybody should read it. In fact, everybody, even if you're not a Transformers fan, I think the Wreckers trilogy is the best Transformers series that has been done. I'm willing to stand over that. And I think if anybody gets a chance, as Nick said in the interview last week, there is a collection coming out next month. Anybody who's even remotely interested in comics needs to get that trade paperback next month and give the series a read.
Did he say there was some sort of bonus content in there as well? Didn't he say there was like some sort of stories that haven't,
additional stuff? They did a lot of additional stuff for a Last Stand of the Wreckers hardcover a few years ago. That included, you know, additional tech stories, biographies for most of the characters, you know, tech specs, and, you know, extra content like one-page comics and so on. So all that's going to be included in this trade paperback that's coming out next month in July. So it's going to be a hefty book, I'd say, because there's a lot of content in there between, you know, six issues of Wreckers, five issues of Sins of Wreckers, and then this annual is essentially a two-issue-long comic. So, you know, you're getting 13 issues of comics plus all the bonus content. That's probably going to be close to 300 pages, I would say. So, you know, a hefty, hefty book. I might pick it up myself, actually.
I'm looking forward to that because it's been a while since I read the first two as well.
I have Last Stand of the Wreckers in pretty much every format it's been released in. Like, I have the Spanish trade paperback, nice. Last Stand of the Wreckers, if you believe
that. What's it called?
Última Batalla de los Wreckers.
Amazing.
La Última Batalla de los Wreckers. So I picked it up in Madrid a couple of years ago. So, you know, it's definitely, like I said, it's a very strong ending to the best Transformers series. And it's definitely a five potatoes from me.
I'm also going to go five potatoes, but only because Nick is probably going to listen to this now. He's a full-on listener and I don't want to upset him. I'm just kidding. But no, I have to say five as well. It's an absolute stonker. It was one of those ones, like, you know, when you get like an annual, sometimes you're kind of like, oh, I'm going to have to find some time to read this. I just opened it and that was it. It was done in like, you know, and I was like, where am I? And then all of a sudden Shockwave 4 million years ago had ruined my life. But no, seriously, it was a cracking book, really solid. And the art is sensational. And just to see Jeff Senior at it again as well. Just, I love that. It literally takes you from now.
Takes you from now back to the 80s.
Big time.
He's doing some art for Lost Light as well, I believe.
Cool.
We'll see him again before this all finishes.
They should just have Jeff do the entire all the last issues. He should just do everything.
Oh, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Same way he did with G2.
Yeah, yeah. Just like go out. Like, I'm here for the end. Anywho, massive, amazing book. Get it. We're not gonna spoil the end, as Paddy mentioned. This is one that we definitely think you guys should just pick up and read. And in actual fact, just pick up all of the ones. Support the brands. But anywho, that's it for this installment of the Full Force Comics Burst. Thank you to my awesome co-hosts, Paddy and Brian. See you next time. And as always, Full Force. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing, and commenting on these videos. And as always, you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter @TheFullForce, liking the Facebook page, facebook.com/TheFullForce. And if you'd like to contact the show, you can message us on either of those platforms with feedback, questions, or just a troll. Look out for more of these comic bursts on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, our Facebook page, Twitter feed, and YouTube channel from now on. Full Force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Distant Planet Comics and Collectibles, located at 601 Business Loop 70 West Suite 263, located in the Parkade Center, Columbia, Missouri. You can visit their website at distantplanetcomics.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/distantplanetcomics.